The children are invited to come back here at 11 o'clock to do the chanting with the monastics and also to do walking meditation. Congratulations for having made the two promises. When you hear the bell, you might like to stand up and bow to the Sangha before you go out. See you later. 11 o'clock. Breathing in, I know that I am still in the retreat. Breathing out, I smile to my Sangha. The first four exercises of mindful breathing is to take care of our body. The first one is in out, to recognize our in breath and to recognize our breath. And we focus our attention on our in breath and out breath only. Identify in breath and out breath. The second one is to follow our in breath all the way through, to follow our out breath all the way through, to follow. And these two first exercises can already help cultivate mindfulness and concentration. And we enjoy breathing in and out. And if we have enough mindfulness and concentration while breathing in and out, we may get insight also, insight that we are alive, that there are many wonders of life that are available in the here and the now, that we don't need to run into the future in order to be happy. Many kind of insight can come already with mindful breathing. And the third exercise is to become aware of our body, aware of our body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my body. That is to bring our mind back to our body. And we are fully present in the here and the now. Body and mind are together. We are truly present. And the fourth is to release the tension in body. And when we release the tension in our body, we reduce the pain in our body also. So with the fifth, we move to the realm of feelings. And the fifth one is to recognize a feeling of joy. Or we may produce a feeling of joy using the energy of mindfulness to recognize the many conditions of joy and happiness that are already available. Recognize joy or generate joy. The sixth is to recognize and generate happiness. The seventh one is to recognize, to become aware of a painful feeling. And the eighth one is to embrace tenderly the painful feeling or emotion in order to get a relief, embracing our pain. And we can do it collectively also. And then we move to the nine exercises of mindful breathing. We know that there are more than 50 mental formations. And there are positive, negative, and neutral mental formations. And the nine is to recognize any mental formation that just manifests itself. Whether it is a joy, or happiness, or sorrow, or fear, we have to recognize them, recognizing. Here we recognize joy. Here we recognize any mental formation. So mind is a kind of river. And each drop of water in the river is a mental formation. They succeed each other and they flow. And to meditate means to be there and observe and recognize the birth, the stay, and the dying down of a mental formation. And you can do that without being carried away by these mental formations. The tenth exercise is to touch the root seeds that are there in the depth of our consciousness, like the seed of understanding, the seed of compassion, the seed of non-fear. There are many good things down there. So the practice is to invite them to come up, to manifest. And we can support each other in watering the beautiful seeds in us. And we have learned that when we spoke about right diligence, four steps. And this is called invigorating the mind, or gladdening the mind. To make them stronger, to have them grow at the base. This is called the practice of transformation at the base. At the base, there are seeds, and when the seeds manifest up on the level of mental consciousness, they are called mental formations. And if you are able to help a good seed like compassion to manifest up there and keep them up there longer, at the base, the grain, the seed will grow. And that is transformation at the base. Our love, our compassion, our insight continue to grow down there. And the elephant exercise is to use techniques of concentration. Concentrating the mind. With some mindfulness and concentration, embracing our pain and sorrow, we can bring some relief. But in order to really transform the block of pain, we need the practice of samadhi, a powerful concentration. Samadhi concentration has the power to burn away the afflictions. Suppose there is a lens receiving the sun rays, and then it is concentrated here. Ekagata, one-pointed mind. The mind is concentrated to just one point. And the power of concentration become powerful, and it can burn away the afflictions, whether it is fear or anger or despair. So concentration is a kind of power, having the capacity to transform, to liberate, to burn away the afflictions like fear, anger, illusion, and so on. And there are many practices of concentration, dozens of them. And there are three kinds of concentration called three doors of liberation. that are available in every school of Buddhism. The concentration called emptiness, the concentration called signlessness, and the concentration called aimlessness. And you can find, we can find these teachings and practice in every Buddhist tradition. They are called the three doors of liberation. But there are more. The Buddha proposed many more practices of concentration. Impermanence, non-self, interbeing, dependent origination. All these are methods of samadhi concentration. And if we know how to use them, we can unlock the door of understanding and liberate us from fear, anger, and hate. So the elephant is concentrating the mind, and the 12 is to liberate the mind. Liberating mind, the mental formation. So with the practice of being aware of the pain and embracing the pain, you can bring a relief and suffer less. But in order to fully transform the pain and the sorrow, we need using practice of samadhi concentration in order to really liberate us from that mental formation called fear or anger or despair. And the next four are four concentrations proposed by the Buddha. So the method of the proposed by the Buddha in the Sutra of Mindful Breathing is very methodical. It begins with body and goes to the feeling and goes to the mental formation, and using techniques of meditation, concentration in order to liberate. In the Preliminary Chanting book, you can find the Sutra of Mindful Breathing with 16 exercises. And one time we organized a retreat, 21-day retreat in America. And the subject of our studies and practice there is the Sutra on Mindfulness, on mindful breathing. And the Dhamma talks of that 21-day retreat have been transcribed and made into a book called The Path of Emancipation. The Path of Emancipation, available in English. So today we consider a little bit the three concentrations proposed by the Buddha, the three concentrations practice that are available in every tradition of Buddhism. And first of all, the concentration on emptiness. Emptiness does not mean non-existence. This glass can be empty or can be full of tea. But in order to be empty or to be full, the glass has to be there. So emptiness does not mean non-existence. this glass is empty of water now, but it's not empty of air. It's full of air. So what is helpful is that we ask the question, empty of what? The Bodhisattva Avalokita say that everything is empty. And he asked him, Mr. Bodhisattva, you say everything is empty, but I would like to ask, empty of what? To be empty is always to be empty of something. This is empty of tea, but not empty of air. So when we contemplate a flower like this, we see that the flower is full of everything. The whole cosmos have come and have the flower to manifest. The cloud, the sunshine, the earth, time, space, gardener, everything has come together in order to help a flower to manifest. And you can see that a flower is full of the cosmos. Why? We say that it is empty. And Bodhisattva could say that, well, you are right. It is full. The flower is full of the cosmos. But it is empty of only one thing. Empty of a separate existence. Because a flower cannot be by herself alone. A flower has to interbe with the whole cosmos. A flower is made only of non-flower elements. And if you remove all these non-flower elements, there's no flower left. So it is clear that the flower has to interbe with the cloud. She has to interbe with the sunshine. She has to interbe with everything in the cosmos. She cannot be by herself alone. And we can see that to be means to interbe. To be can only mean to interbe, but to be by oneself alone, that is something impossible. So we begin to see the nature of emptiness in everything. And sometimes that nature of emptiness is called no self. There is no self. But no self does not mean that you are not there. It's like the glass. The glass is empty, but the glass is there. So no self, it does not mean that you don't exist. When we look at one action, we believe that there should be an actor behind that can exist separately from the action. In quantum physics, we learn that force and matter, they are just two aspects of the same thing. When we say that the wind blows, we might imagine that there is some blower exists outside of the wind. But in fact, there is no blower. There is only the wind. And if the wind does not blow, it's not the wind at all. So when we produce a thought, we may believe that there is a thought and there is a thinker that exists separately from the thought. But we know very well that you cannot find a blower outside of the wing. You cannot find a rainer beside of the rain. So action an actor cannot be separate, two separated things. So when we produce a thought, the thought is us. There is no thinker existing outside of the thought. When we say something, that speech is us. And there is no speaker outside. And when we do something, our action is ourselves. There is no actor outside. When the French philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre say, "L'homme est la somme de ses actes," man is the sum of his act, he comes very close to that. There is no man outside of the act, of the action. So when you produce thought, speech, and act, these things are us, and they are our continuation. What you have produced in terms of thought, speech, and action are you, and they continue you. Not only in here, but out there. You continue always. That is energy. And energy and mass, they are the same thing. So empty means to be empty of a separate existence. There is no separate self. And that does not mean non-existence. And when a this morning, when we before we bow to the Buddha, our teacher, we chanted a verse to help us remove the notion that the Buddha is outside of us. The Buddha is an entity that exists outside of us. The verse goes like this: the one who bows and the one who is bowed to. The one who bows, that means you. And the one who is bowed to, it means the Buddha. In the beginning, we think that we are a separate entity and the Buddha is another separate entity. And the one who bows and the one who is bowed to, they are two different entities, separate entities. And that is not the best kind of bowing, because that there is no right view. If you think that you and the Buddha are two separate entities, well, you bow, your bow does not reflect insight and wisdom. So before you bow to the Buddha, you have to meditate and you say, the one who bows and the one who is bowed to, both, the nature of both are empty. A Buddha is made only of non-Buddha elements. And me, I am made only of non-me elements, just like the flower. If you remove non-Buddha elements from the Buddha, there's no Buddha left. And if you remove non-me elements from me, there is no me left. That is the meditation on emptiness. And we have begun with that flower. And we agree with each other. that if we remove all the non-flower elements, there is no flower left. The same thing is true with you and with the Buddha. So it means, dear Buddha, you are not a separate entity. You are in me and I am in you. You are made of non-you element, and I am a non-you element. And I am made of non-me element, and you are one of the non-me elements. That is meditation. And if you cannot see the Buddha in you and you in the Buddha, that is not, the communication is not deep enough. There is still dualistic thinking, and it goes against the wisdom of emptiness. The one who bows and the one who is bowed to, their nature, both are empty. And that is why communication is perfect. And only when you have that insight, well, the bow that you make can truly help the Buddha to manifest. You don't think of the Buddha or God as a separate entity. You have transcended the dualistic way of looking, of seeing things. And that is right view. So to bow like that is not just to worship. To bow like that is an act of meditation. And you touch the inside of non-duality. You touch the inside of inter-being. You touch the inside of emptiness. And when the father looks into the son, and if he knows that he is inside his son, and then he has seen his son. But if he thinks that his son is a totally different person, not connected to him, he is a different person and his son is another person. He has not seen his son yet. But if he can see him in his son and his son in him, he touched the nature of emptiness. He touched the nature of interbeing. And no anger is possible. With the insight of interbeing, no discrimination, no anger, no hate is possible. That is why the insight of emptiness, the insight of interbeing, can evaporate anger and fear. And meditating deeply, looking deeply into the nature of what is there, you can touch the nature of interbeing in it. Whether it is a flower, or a Buddha, or a person, or a tree, you can touch the nature of emptiness and interbeing. And you see that the one contains the all. David Bohm used the expression the explicit order and the implicit order. Reality can be seen in two ways. In the explicit order, things are outside of each other. The flower is outside of the cloud. The flower is outside of the sunshine. But when you look deeply, you see that the sunshine and the cloud are in the flower. So in the implicit order, things are inside of each other. And that is very close to emptiness, very close to... It's very exciting that scientists are now coming closer and closer to the insight of emptiness and into being. The second door of liberation is the door of signlessness. Sign is a mark, an appearance, and you recognize things through the sign. But the Buddha said that if you can't rely so much on the sign, you are caught, you'll be caught in delusion and wrong perceptions. You recognize a cloud floating in the sky, because there is a sign, the appearance of a cloud. And when the cloud has become rain, or snow, we don't recognize it anymore, and we say that our cloud has died. And we can cry, we may cry. But if we know that our cloud can be found, can be identified under another sign, and then we will not cry. In fact, it is impossible for a cloud to die, because in our mind, to die means from something you become nothing, from someone you become no one. That is our idea of death. But with this practice of looking deeply, you see that nothing can die. And there is a French scientist whose name is Lavoisier. He said that nothing is born, nothing dies. Rien ne se crée, rien ne se perd. A cloud can become snow, or rain, or hail. But a cloud cannot become nothing. A cloud cannot pass from being into non-being. And if we practice signlessness, we will be free from grief, despair, and fear. Your beloved cloud is no longer in the sky, so you cry. You are caught in grief. But your cloud, in her new form, the rain, is calling you, "Darling, darling, I'm here. Don't you see me?" So instead of getting caught in despair, you have to look deeply and to see that your beloved one has not passed from being into non-being. It's impossible for a cloud to die. It's impossible for your beloved to die. She is no longer in the usual form that you used to see, but that does not mean that she no longer exists. So you should not count on the appearance, on the sign. Otherwise, we'll be caught in despair and anger, in this Dharma hall, there is a lot of cloud, but we don't see them. When we breathe, we generate cloud. The water vapor is there, but we don't see. It is a kind of gas, we don't see it. But when the air, which is full of water vapor, come in touch with something cold, it will begin to be visible, and we see the fog, we see the cloud. There is a high mountain here, and the air, the wind is blowing in this way. You don't see any cloud here, but the air has a lot of water vapor. You don't see it. When it comes to the foot of the mountain, it cannot continue anymore, so it began to go up. And when you go up to this level, it meets the cold, and it becomes visible as a cloud. So you think there is a cloud here, but not here. That is a wrong perception. There is a cloud here, in this very Dharma hall. You don't see it, or you only count on sign, on the mark, on the appearance. So the Buddha said that we should not rely so much on the appearance, on the sign. So the practice of emptiness and silentness help us to touch the nature of interbeing, of no birth and no death. And that can dissipate, remove our fear, our anger, and so on. And the third practice of merit of concentration is called aimlessness. Sunyata, animita, apranihita. Aimlessness means you don't put in front of you an object and you run after that. You no longer long to anything. You don't no longer chase after anything. Because when you come home to the here and the now, you touch deeply what is there. And you know that what you have been looking for, it is right there already in the here and the now. What is what you have been looking for, like Buddha, Jesus, God, the kingdom of God. They are already there, in the here and the now. Your happiness, your peace also. You don't have to go and look for it elsewhere and in the future. This is already it. You don't have to go and look for anything else. On the first day of our retreat, we practice looking deeply into a flower. And I remember I said that this flower, if you come in touch with it deeply, with mindfulness and concentration, you know that this belongs to the kingdom of God. It is the kingdom of God. It contains the kingdom of God. And if you can get in touch with it, you get in touch with the kingdom. You don't have to look for the kingdom elsewhere and in the future. Not only you touch the kingdom of God, but you touch God. And your body also belongs to the kingdom. Your body also is a wonder, like the flower. And you should not have any complex. Not only the lotus is a wonder of life, but the mud that helped create lotus is also a wonder of life. Not only happiness is holy, but suffering is equally holy, because if we know how to handle suffering, we can create happiness. Because happiness is made only of non-happiness elements. That is the insight of interbeing. And therefore, when you touch the truth of signlessness, you don't run anymore. You are peaceful. You are at peace in the here and the now. And happiness, true happiness, becomes possible. Let us contemplate a wave on the surface of the ocean. It looks like there is a beginning and an end. It looks like there is a coming up and a going down. It looks like there is this wave and other waves. And the wave might be caught in this notion, beginning, ending, high, low, being and non-being. And the wave can suffer deeply because of these notions. We know that our cloud can never die. Because to die means from something you suddenly become nothing. But we have learned that nothing can become nothing. And nothing has come from nothing. Because to be born means from nothing, we suddenly become something. From no one, he suddenly becomes someone. That is our idea of birth. But look at our cloud again, before it appears as a cloud. It has been something already. Our cloud has not come from nothing. Our cloud has not passed from the realm of non-being to the realm of being. Before being a cloud, she already has been the water in the ocean, the heat generated by the sun. So the manifestation of the cloud is only new, but we know that we cannot call it the birth of a cloud, because to be born means from nothing, you suddenly become something. But this is only a continuation of something. It is like this sheet of paper before she expressed herself as a sheet of paper. She had been the tree, the rain, the sunshine. So this is only a continuation. The sheet of paper has her former life as a tree. So this is a new manifestation, not just a beginning, not a birth. And we live with our notions of birth and death, being and not being. That is why we suffer. It is possible for the wave to practice meditation, to bend down and touch herself and realize that she is water. In fact, a wave is made of water. And we cannot speak about water in terms of beginning and going up, going down. What the notions apply to wave cannot be applied to water. The moment when the wave realizes she is water, she loses all her fear. She has the joy of going up. She has the joy of going down. She is not afraid of dying because she cannot die. After this point, she continues to be water. And does the wave has to go and search for water? Is water something outside of the wave? No, she is water in the here and the now. The same thing is true with the kingdom of God. The pure land of the Buddha, enlightenment, nirvana. We don't have to look for them elsewhere and in the future. They are our true nature. We don't have to go and look for them. And that is the meaning of aimlessness. You don't have to run and look for it. It is right here and right now. You are already what you want to become. You are a wonder. You belong to the kingdom. Enjoy. You are the one, a wonder, and you are in touch with wonders. Suppose you draw a line from left to right, representing time. And we suppose we select one point here and call it B, point B, birth. Every one of us has a birth certificate. And we believe that we only begin to exist from point B. Before that, we did not exist. We have passed from non-being into being. So the segment before B is called non-being. And starting from B, well, we enter into the realm of being. That's the way we think. And it is not right thinking. because it does not base on right view. So we believe that we have passed from the realm of non-being into non-being through the point B. And we continue to stay in the realm of being until later, maybe at the point D, death. Maybe 100 years, maybe less. But from the point D on, we pass again to the realm of non-being. And that is our notion of life and death, and being and non-being. When we observe a sheet of paper, when we observe a cloud, we know that this is wrong, this concept of birth and death, being and non-being are wrong. Because if we speak of the cloud, we know that the cloud, before point B, the cloud did not belong to non-being. The cloud was the water in the ocean, the heat, and so on, many other things. So this point B is only a point of continuation, not a beginning. The notion of beginning cannot be applied to reality. There is no beginning. There is no birth. And some of the scientists have found that there is nothing, nothing is born, nothing dies. Lavoisier is a scientist. He does not call himself a practitioner of meditation. But he also practiced looking deeply, and he found out that there is no birth, there is no death. Rien ne se crée, rien ne se perd. So the sheet of paper also, when it appears in the form of sheet of paper, is not the beginning. Before that, well, it was a tree. So the sheet of paper has not passed from non-being to being, and will not pass from being to non-being. So our notion of birth and death, being and non-being, cannot be applied to reality. And nirvana is the removal of all notions, including the notion of birth and death, being and non-being. To be empty of all these notions. Let us try to meditate on a flame, on a little flame. We know that a flame is made only of non-flame elements, right? Like the flower. And non-flame elements are already there, inside of the box and outside of the box. Oxygen is a non-flame element. And we know that without oxygen, a flame cannot manifest. So we can talk to our flame. Let us not think that our flame belongs to the realm of non-being. And when she manifests, she passes into the realm of being. So we say, my dear little flame, I know you are somewhere there. Why don't you manifest for us? I know you are there, inside the box and outside the box. You are in non-you elements. why don't you manifest for us? And then the flame, if you listen, you can hear the answer. Dear Thầy, dear Sangha, I am ready to manifest for you, but I need one more condition, one movement from your fingers. And then we provide the flame with the last non-flame elements. And the flame manifests. Thank you, dear little flame, for having manifested for us. Please stay a little bit longer. We may like to ask, my dear little flame, where have you come from? And where have you gone? Have you been gone now? And we can hear something like this, dear Thầy, dear Sangha, I have not come from anywhere. I have not come from the south. I have not come from the north, the east, or the west. When conditions come together sufficiently, I manifest. My nature is the nature of no coming. My nature is non-local. And we know that the flame has told us the truth. And if we ask, my dear little flame, where have you gone? And she will say, I have not gone anywhere. I have not gone to the south, to the north, to the above, to the below. My nature is non-local. When conditions are no longer sufficient, I just stop manifestation and wait for a chance to manifest again. My nature is no coming, no going. Think of your beloved one. Think of the person that has left you. We have cried and we say, darling Hua, where have you come and where have you gone? But our beloved one, her nature, his nature is also the nature of no coming and no going. She has not come from non-being into being. She has not passed from being into non-being. All these are notions, ideas. And meditation helps us to touch the real nature of reality and remove all these notions as being and non-being, birth and death, coming and going. Now we have two flames. And we shall ask this flame that looks like another flame. My dear little flame, are you the same with the other flame? Or you are a totally different one? That is meditation. And if we have enough concentration, we can hear the answer. Dear Thầy, dear Sangha, although I am not exactly the same with the other flame, I am not a totally different flame either. When we look at the flame like this, we have the impression that it is the same flame going on. But we don't know that there are a multitude of flames succeeding each other. Like when we project the film, we see one person, the image of one person making movement. But we don't know that there's many pictures succeeding each other to give you an impression that is the same person, the same actor. So we have the notion of birth and death. Being and non-being. Coming and going, and sameness, otherness. When we open the family album, and we saw ourselves as a five-year-old, as a baby. You see that how different we are from that baby. We have grown into an adult. And we may ask, are we the same person with that baby? Or are we a totally different person? The answer is, like the answer we have received from the flame. We are not exactly the same person with the baby because we have changed so much. Form, feelings, perceptions, mental formation, consciousness have been changing a lot. But we are not an entirely different person either. So reality transcends all these notions. Birth and death, being and non-being, coming and going, sameness and otherness. There are two theologians who describe God as the foundation of being. He's still caught in the notion of being. Because the notion of being exists only together with the notion of non-being. And if God is the foundation of being, who will be the foundation of non-being? God should transcend both concepts of being and non-being. You cannot describe God in terms of being or non-being. And deep meditation help us transcend the notion of being and non-being. To be or not to be, that is not the question. Even scientists are still caught in the notion of being, beginning. But they are on their way to discover the nature of reality, that transcending the notion of existence and non-existence. They begin to say things like quantum, the quanta, do not really exist. they fluctuate in and out of existence. They don't really exist. They have only a tendency to exist. Very close. And meditation can help them remove notions of beginning, ending, being and non-being more quickly. We will have a 21-day retreat in Plum Village next year for scientists and Buddhist practitioners on this team. And both traditions can help each other. Please join us. 21 day. We will examine these teaching and practice in depth because we have 21 days. So Nirvana is not a place where we try to go to. It's not something in the future that we are trying to reach. Nirvana is the nature of reality. And we can get in touch with our true nature by practicing looking deeply. And able to remove all these notions. The notions of birth and death, being and non-being, sameness, otherness, coming and going, are the foundation of all afflictions, fear, anger, despair. And if we are able to touch our true nature of no birth, no death, no coming, no going, no being, no not being, all these afflictions like fear, anger, despair will no longer be possible. And that is what the Buddha called a right view. If you have right viewed, all your thinking will be right thinking, all your speech will be right speech. And you can only create peace and happiness. And that is why on our first day of the retreat, we already say that the Buddha described right view as the insight that is free from the notion of being and non-being. And let us organize our life in such a way that we have time to go deep into this. It will satisfy us deeply. We need a spiritual dimension in our life. And if we can touch the nature, our true nature of no birth, no death, no being and non-being, and then no fear will be there, no despair will be there. And we can peace and solidity will help us to serve other people much better. In the time of the Buddha, there was a lay practitioner called Anattapindika. He was a businessman. He offered the Buddha a park. He bought that park from a prince and offered to the Buddha as a practice center. And he took a great deal of pleasure to serve the Buddha and the Sangha. And one day the Buddha learned that Anattapindika Panikkaya was dying. And he sent his disciple Shariputra to come and visit and help Anathapanikkaya to die peacefully. And on that day, Shariputra learned that Anathapanikkaya is going to die in 24 hours. So he asked his brother in the Dhamma, the Venerable Ananda, a cousin of the Buddha, to come with him. So when they came, Anathapanikkaya tried to sit up, but he was too weak in order to sit up. Shariputra said that, dear friend, please stay on your bed. We will bring a few chairs and sit close to you, and we can spend some time with you. And when the two venerables sat down, Shariputra asked, dear friend, how do you feel in your body? Is the pain in your body decreasing or still increasing? Anathapanikkaya said, well, dear venerables, it does not seem that the pain in my body is decreasing. It is increasing all the time. Shariputra said that, in that case, let us practice together the recollection of the three jewels. And he began to guide, to offer a guided meditation on the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Shariputra was one of the most intelligent monks. And he knew that Anathapanikkaya had taken a lot of pleasure serving the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. That's why if he can focus the attention of the lay person on the three jewels, that will lessen the pain in the body. In fact, the guided meditation was very helpful. And focusing his attention on Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha reduced a lot of pain in the body, and he was able to smile. And Shariputra said, let us continue with our meditation. Breathing in, I'm aware of the element water in me. Breathing out, I smile to the element of water in me. Breathing in, I am aware of the element water outside of me. Breathing in, I'm aware of the element heat in me, water, earth, heat, and air. Breathing in, I know that the element water is not me. Breathing out, I know that the water, air, is not me. I'm much more than water and air. Breathing in, I know that this body is not me. I'm much more than this body. I am my action. I have the thought that I have produced. I am the speech I have produced, and I have produced many beautiful thoughts and deeds and speeches. I have served the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Breathing in, I know that this body has come from nowhere, and this body will go nowhere. When conditions manifest, when conditions are sufficient, this body manifests. And when conditions are no longer sufficient, this body stops manifesting and will manifest in other forms. So that guided meditation tried to help Anathapanikkaya to touch the nature of no coming, no going, no birth and no death. There is only manifestation and remanifestation. There is no birth and no death, no coming and no going. And after about 15 minutes of guided meditation, Anattapinika began to cry. And Ananda said, dear friend, why do you cry? Do you regret something? Or don't you succeed in the meditation? With a smile, Anattapinika said, no, Venerable Ananda, I practice very successfully, and I do not regret anything. Why are you crying then? Anattapinika said, I cry because I am so moved. I have served the Buddha in the last 30 years, but I have never received a teaching and a practice wonderful like this. I'm completely free now. I'm not afraid of dying because I know that nothing dies, nothing is born. Ananda said, dear friend, you don't know, but this teaching, we monastics, we receive almost every day. Anattapinika said, dear Venerable Ananda, please go home and tell Lord Buddha that many of us lay people, we are so busy, but there are those of us who still have time and to receive this wonderful teaching. So please tell the Lord to dispense this teaching and practice also to the lay community. And Ananda said, well, I will tell that, I will do that. I will go back to the Rishita Grove and tell the Buddha what you have recommended. And after the two venerable left, Anattapinika passed away very peacefully. The story of his death is recorded in a sutra. And in the Plumbly Chanting book, you can read that sutra and see how the Venerable Sariputra gave a guided meditation that helped the layperson to get out of these notions of birth and death, being and non-being, coming and going. I think this is the cream of Buddhist teaching and practice. And we have to reorient our lives so that we have time in order to enjoy this kind of learning and practicing. And then when we have got that kind of insight and non-fear, we can very well sit by the bed of an agonizing person and help him or her to die peacefully, like Sariputra has helped Anattapinika. Dear friends, it has been a great joy for us to be with you in the last 6 days. And we have quite many good seeds in us. Please remember, when you go back to your city, try to set up a group of practitioners in order to organize the recitation of the 5 mindfulness trainings, organize a tea ceremony, organize a session of sitting meditation, organize a session of walking meditation to nourish our practice. And we are the continuation of the Buddha. Each of us should be a torch in order to help transmit the light of the Buddha to the next generation. And we have chance to be together again in the future. The monastics and the children are invited to come up, and we will send something together to offer our thanks to the Buddhas and the particle teachers that have helped us, supporting us during this retreat. After this, we shall do walk and meditation together. The children are invited to come up with the monastics. And we go chant, we can sing the song, No Coming, No Going. The children are invited up here. And also members of the Order of Interbeing, please come up.